Today's reading is drawn from our own liberal religious tradition. Its author, Clinton Lee Scott, served a succession of Universalist churches from 1914 until 1971. If you're doing the math, that means that he retired from active ministry at the very impressive age of 84. Never's going to happen for me. He was a great minister, but he's best known for this book called Parish Parables, which is a whimsical but revealing collection of scenes from church life as he experienced it over his time. So here he deliberately mimics the formal style of the King James Bible, and these parables first appeared in print in 1946. Pat Manley years ago sent me this reading. So Alex and Carly will share it with us.
Now it came to pass that while the elder in Israel tarried at Babylon, a message came to him from a distant city saying, "Come thou and counsel with us, and help us to search out a priest, for he that did serve us hath gone mad." And the elder in Israel arose and journeyed to the distant city.
And when the men of affairs were assembled, the elder spake unto them, saying, "What manner of men seek ye to be your next priest?"
And they answered him and said unto him, "We seek a young man, yet with the wisdom of gray hairs, one that speaketh his mind freely, yet giveth offense to no one." "That draweth the multitude to the temple on the Sabbath, but will not be displeased when we ourselves are absent."
"We desire one that hath a gay mood, yet is of sober mind, that seeketh out dark sayings and prophecies, yet speaketh not over our heads. That filleth the temple and buildeth up, yet defileth not the sanctuary with a motley assortment of strangers."
"We seek one that putteth first the instruction to the young, yet requireth not that we become teachers. That causeth the treasury to prosper, yet asketh not that we give more of our substance. Verily, we seek a prophet that will be unto us a leader, but will not seek to change us, for we like not to be disturbed."
And the elder in Israel answered and said unto them, "When I have found such a priest, I will indeed send him unto you. Yet will ye have to wait long, for the mother of such a one hath not yet been born."
Stephanie, can I get an amen? You know, we laugh, but I don't know if you'd believe, or maybe you would, how true that reading is. So this sermon begins on a long drive over into Winchester this past Wednesday. And I'm in my car, and I'm out on the roads early to make it to our bi-monthly meetings of Unitarian Universalist ministers. And for all of you who have to face 128 traffic or Pike traffic or Route 9 traffic day after day, week after week, my heart and my soul literally break for you. I'm not quite sure how you do it, but then you don't have a choice. Now, I'm always eager to make these meetings. And it's not just because it gives me the chance to soak up some gossip and hear stories of other ministers that make me so glad that I don't serve where they're serving. It's also because I need a minister too. And one of the losses of professional ministry is that, in the midst of really so many blessings, is that one loses the person in your life who nurtures you and needles you week after week. And if you're wondering if that's the job description, to nurture and needle, the answer is yes, that's my job description. And unclog toilets from time to time. True. And deal with the administration of coffee hour much better this year. And the challenge of the work is that each of us, each of you, depending on the week that you've had, need a different proportion of nurturing and needling. And you tell me when I get it wrong. I get emails in the subject heading, "Just a thought, Nathan." And these emails are why I believe in grace, and why you should believe in grace too, that we will be gentle with each other and try to remember that if we're not getting what we want on a Sunday in this hour together, it's maybe because someone else is getting what they need. And we live in community. So I'm in my car on Route 128, and there is the Philippines in the news. And I'm thinking in particular of beautiful Ligia Figueres, who was the recipient of my big crush in the fifth grade. She was so beautiful. But he left at the end of the school year to return with her family to the Philippines. And so this morning and on Wednesday in the car, I'm wondering, where is Ligia? And then on the radio that many of you tell me to turn off, Nathan, to stop listening to so much news, there is the bark, or maybe we can call it the bite, of Washington and the whole healthcare fiasco. A matter that's very personal to me, because I've had a loved one turn down health insurance because of a pre-existing condition. And there's the family member this week that I'm worried about, and the distant cousin who sent my mother an email to a few of us looking for support as she came out gay and expects to tell everyone at Christmas. And all of you are on my mind in the car. You who write prayers on these sheets of paper, often anonymously, and then you put them in the offering bowls, and whose names that we read out loud in our staff meeting this week, and we rang this bell after each one, saying, "Spirit of compassion, hear our prayer." It took us a half an hour. The things that you carry in with you through the front doors are sometimes so heavy and so unspoken, especially at this time of year, as you and I stare together into the tunnel of the holidays, so full of expectation that all is well and bright and lovely and beautiful, which is why they say that depression and suicide peak in November and December and early January, because folks think that I'm the only one, and it must be my problem. So I have a plea, I'm thinking as I'm driving, to share with you today. Can we promise this year to give ourselves and each other a break? Can we promise to find someone or be that someone for someone else with whom we do not have to pretend? Can we please do that? So I'm still on Route 128. It is a long commute. I'm not even as far as the exit for Waltham, and I see the guy to my right and the woman to my left accelerate past me at the same time. and swing nearly together into that little sliver of space in front of my car before swerving away so they don't hit each other. Both of them then giving that international sign for the opposite of I love you. Do you know what sign I'm talking about? And I'm thinking, wouldn't it be funny if the two of them in those two cars were colleagues of mine and then found themselves an hour from now singing from the same hymnal, trying to act all holy. It didn't happen that day, but the lasting fear that I have is that I will be driving somewhere and one of you will cut me off. And you will see a whole different side of your minister. Because the truth is, when one decides to become a religious professional, or when a congregation decides, as you will later today, to vote on hiring another religious professional, that person and all of you people decide to do something very extraordinary. You decide to grow a soul in public, in community. And part of the reason I think that ministers and rabbis and priests and communities disappoint us so much is that we have such high expectations for how big our souls will be. And they should be high expectations. The religious work of the pew and the pulpit are worthy of high expectations, are they not? Which is why we also need to forgive each other. Email line, just a thought, Nathan. Back to 128, the dueling cars in front of me, and there's the nattering and the chattering news, and there's the heavy sack of prayers that's sitting with me on the passenger seat. All of it reminding me once again how thirsty I am, how hungry I am to sit in a pew like you do and hit the refresh button on my spirit. Wouldn't that be great? You could just click the mouse on your soul and watch the little dial. To hear again the message of comfort for the brokenhearted, to hear again and be given again the garland instead of ashes, to hear preached again the message that the captives will be set free. Do you walk through the front doors here, did you today, with a similar hunger? I'm wondering. Because I pray that you do. I pray that you come looking to Stephanie and I and your religion and your congregation to fill something up in you that cannot be filled anywhere else, any other time. But the trick, of course, is that you have to help make that happen with me. That is why when one of you sends me a compliment about a service or a sermon, I quote you Bill Coffin, who said that good preaching requires an equal proportion. Good words, my job, and good ears, your job. Meaning that what happens here is mutually dependent. And I've been thinking of this dependence, it's really an interdependence, this shared ministry a lot this year, as we prepare to celebrate my 10 years with you and yours with me. In the office, there is a folder that says on the tab, Dietering Decade, for the celebration in February. And I've been told in no uncertain terms to not look in the folder for fear that I will learn about the roasts that are planned. But the thing is, the tab would need to be ribbons and ribbons long. It would need to extend out of Erica's office all the way through the room and into the sanctuary to properly honor all the names that make a ministry possible. And for the newer folks in the room, you know, it was not always so here. In decades past, this congregation had a reputation for choosing what it called strong ministers and then picking big, huge fights with them. And it was not pretty. The ghosts of these ministers in these decades still roam the halls, and they pop out at me in closets. And they show up to me in meetings, in all kinds of meetings, in the ways that we talk to each other, in the ways that we sometimes try to hide the money, in the ways that we don't trust the minister. You know, those up and down years, and there were a lot of down years, were full of interdependence too, meaning that all of us, all of you, bear some responsibility for what happened and what was done well and what was not. You know, in this way, parish ministry is more like a marriage than it is a job. It takes two, or in our case, 265 adults and 135 children and one minister and one intern and a DRE and an administrator and a communications and membership coordinator and a director of music ministry and a sexton and hopefully after today an assistant minister. It takes all of us to tango. So I'm still on Route 128. And now I'm looking into the rearview mirror at the angry snout of a BMW right up on my Subaru bumper, which begs the question, could a Unitarian Universalist minister drive a BMW and still keep his or her job? Are we that welcoming? And while I'm looking into the mirror, I'm also thinking of my past with you. When I arrived here, I was 31 years old. I was younger than some of your children, and I looked even younger still. I'm looking for the minister, more than one of you said to my face in those early years. And when I told them that I indeed was him, see my diploma? I had to endure the raised eyebrows, then, okay, you'll do, responses that fell across your eyes. Now, if I'd been older or more experienced in these moments, I would have resisted the pressure to try to be everything to all of you, to not try, as our reading suggests, to embody youth yet have gray hairs, to show the courage to speaketh my mind, but to offend no one, to draweth a multitude to the temple, but not be displeased when you don't show up. But instead, I sweated out those early years, trying to prove myself to you, and you to me. And in our case, it took death and birth and late night board meetings and hospital bedsides and some admittedly bad sermons and low attendance Sundays when I thought I would show up with a hot, necessary message. But there were few of you here to hear it. In other words, it took you to be disappointed in me and me to be disappointed in you for us to grow together. If in these last years you notice me trying to challenge us more, know it is because I believe our relationship can handle it and it needs the challenge to thrive. Remember, nurture and needle. Which is why when I finally arrived at First Parish in Winchester, the congregation in its own desert time, as it lives between ministers, feeling like a person feels between jobs, listless a little, and depressed, searching for direction, wondering what's next. It's why I slouched into pews that, believe it or not, are more uncomfortable than these. So reflective in my slouch, so weary of 128 combat, so laden with prayers. I slouched looking for a minister to nurture and to needle me. And after all of that, after all this buildup and expectation and travel and ache, would you believe that the worship was so very disappointing? The preacher off of her game, on the edge of a cold, the hymns a little blah, the microphones sketchy, flowers left over from the previous Sunday all flopping and drooped. And it did not help matters that the worship theme, can you guess it, was death. I came all the way on Route 128 for this. But then came the end, and we were invited to stand after the hymn, and we were asked to reach across the pews to grab a hand. And we said together the benediction. Now, years ago, you might remember that I tried to get us to do this, to grab a hand. But we balked at the time, half of you loving it and half of you not loving it. Nathan, just a thought. Ministers have gone crazy. Actually, ministers' spirits have been broken, trying to figure out what to do when this happens. But not me. Not yet. You know, the thing is that I don't actually like to hold hands all that much, especially that of the retired minister behind me, whose palm is now in mine, and I'm sure has been sneezing the entire hour. Except I don't really care, because his palm is the same one that was going like this during the coffee hour of that meeting, when he told a small circle of us that, you know, his retirement funds are about up, and Social Security is not enough. And after all these years of service to this faith and to people, he doesn't have enough to live. So he's here, and to my left is Stephanie, who this last year and a half has entrusted her vocation with us, given it to us on open hands, an open heart. If there is more important work that a congregation can do for our faith than nurture future ministers, my friends, I do not know what it is. And in front of me is Robin, who you heard from earlier, creating heaven on earth, newly ordained, baby Isaac on her chest, so full of anticipation and, too, it needs to be said, trepidation and desperation to find a congregation just like us where she can minister. You know, for as hungry for nourishment that all of you come and sit into these pews, I also want you to know how hungry those who are ordained for this ministry are to be there with you and feed your spirit. This is our life's work. The place where, as Buechner said, our deep gladness meets your deep need. And the place where these two hungers intersect, the pew and the pulpit, is such a sacred thing. This is why our vote today to consider hiring an assistant minister instead of a director of religious education is so significant and no small feat indeed. Even if you can't vote, you should stay in these pews and watch democracy happen. So I'm holding all of these hands, and I'm thinking that all of this, all of the emails, just a thought, are totally worth it. The Spirit has sent me to bring good news to the oppressed, I'm thinking, as we stand there in Winchester, to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and to release the prisoners, and to comfort all who mourn. The palms are sweaty, and the preacher is more than a bit off, and the hymns are really bad. And I came looking for a minister. But I'm thinking, as we prepare to leave and do our best, those ministers and I, to bring praise instead of a faint spirit, gladness instead of tears, freedom instead of imprisonment. As I'm looking for a minister, I'm thinking, as I hold these palms, this will do. I came looking for a minister, but this will do. So may we too feel such need for nourishment and have such high expectations for your ministry, but hopefully not meet with such keen disappointment. But when we do, because my friends, it will happen, may we find and feel some redemption in our shared hours in this room. Can I get an amen?